Okay, we're beginning here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Samachay Amud Bet. Verishona hayomrim, hayotzei bekolar, mvamar, kitvu get liishti. Person who's been taken out in chains. The way Rashi terms it over here is that he's definitely going to be put to death. This is already on the way to his execution, and it's almost certain death. As the Rashi later on in Samachay Amud Bet says, shayodea, shayotzei bekolar, inu chozer. You go out in those chains, you're not coming back. This is his final walk to his execution. On the other hand, others believe that there's a high percentage or high likelihood that you're not coming back or that the execution is going to go through. And therefore, the assumption is that he's not coming back. And he says, write again to my wife, even though he did not say, give it to my wife. So the chiddush is that he is caught up or distracted by the moment, and therefore he just has enough sense to say, write a get to my wife, but he obviously means write the get and give it to her, because if there's no other time, there's nothing else to do. Why write the get unless you're going to give it over here? Chazrud Omar, he added on to this, afami faresh vayotze bishayra. Faresh means going out to sea. Someone who's going on a caravan means a long trip. In both those cases, there were sakanot. He's going to be gone for a long time, and he's distracted at the time that he's leaving because there's a lot in the way of preparations and things to worry about. And if he simply says kitvu, we understand that to mean kitvu u tnu. Bishimin shizuri omer afa misukan. In addition to that, someone who's in danger, someone's on their deathbed, someone's sick, the same thing will apply. If you're in a situation where death or the situation makes it that the person's likely distracted and can't focus on it, and it would make sense to conclude that kitvu means kitvu tnu, we would conclude from his saying, write the get, that he means write the get and give the get. Geneva yotzei bekolar hava. Geneva was been taken out bekolar. Now, Geneva we bumped into a number of times in the Masechta. The first time we bumped into him was on Dav Zayin Amud Aleph, where actually this story is told. We also just saw him on Samach Bet, Amud Aleph, Da from Shabbat, the end of the Perek, he was also mentioned there. He's mentioned one other time, I think, on Chaf Aleph Amud Bet. Geneva was a first-generation Amora. He was a Talmud Chochem Otsum. We know that from the stories on Samach Bet and on Chaf Aleph, that many times the Chachamim asked him questions, and he was extremely erudite. But in both cases, the Amoraim there are discussed whether they should stand up for Geneva, because he is a palga. He was a contentious individual, and therefore they had questions as to his midot, vis-a-vis his Torah knowledge and erudition. And because of that, there were questions amongst the Moraim as to how to treat him or respect him, because his behavior wasn't exactly becoming of an Amora. Now, some of that seems to be because Geneva was either extremely wealthy, or he worked for the government, or maybe both. And since he had that position, he gets a little bit arrogant and contentious because of that, and that turns off or turns away many of the Amoraim. He's still quoted all over the Gemara, but the story that we saw back on Zayin Amud Aleph was Mar Ukva, who said that, what do I do about these individuals who are giving me such a hard time? Am I allowed to daven for something to happen to them or something to go wrong for them? And he sends the question to Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar says, no, that you cannot do that. Do not interfere, or don't ask for someone else to be judged, because it can be turned around on yourself. Then he gets more extreme, and he says, people who are really giving me a hard time, and I have the ability to give them over to the authorities, can I do that? Again, he says, you can't do that. Stand back. He says, Kamitsari li tufa. Says, they're giving me such a hard time that I gotta do this. Well, as it says, Dom Lashem behu yapilim, becha chalalim chalalim. You stand silent and Hashem will take care of it. You go, Ashkeim varei valeim the Beit Midrash, vein kalim alem. You get up early, stay late in the Beit Midrash, Hashem takes care of your enemies. Hadavar yatsami pi Rabbi Elazar. It left the mouth of Rabbi Elazar, v'natnua l'gneiva b'kolar. And as it left the mouth of Rabbi Elazar, it was as if he had given it tzivui that this would happen, and it was taken by the government authorities. Obviously, Mar Ukva did not turn him in over here, but he was taken by the authorities, and here you see the remainder of the story, that Gneva was Yotzei Bekolar. He was taken out to be executed, whether that's because he had an altercation with the government officials, or maybe somebody else turned him in. For whatever reason, this is a continuation, really, of that story back on Zayin Amud Aleph. But again, he is a questionable character because of this duality within his personality. And again, that's the same question we saw every time we bump into him. The Amoraim are asking, shouldn't we stand up for him? He's a Talmid Chacham. And the other Amora always says, Palgahu. He's so contentious, we can't stand up for him. And so here, Gneva was taken out of the Golar. Okay, Avaka Nofik. So when he was on his way out, Amar, Havu Arba Mea Zuzei, Rabbi Avina, Mechamro, Denar Panyo. Says, give 400 zoos to Rabbi Avina from the wine in Nahar Panyo. So obviously he's a very wealthy individual, and here he gifts a portion of that to Rabbi Avina. Amar Rabbi Zera, Dora Rabbi Avina the Silte, Rabbi Avina should pick up his basket, Vaza the Gabi, the Ravuna Rabbe, and should run to Ravuna his Rebbe, the Amar Ravuna Gito Kimatanato. Because he says that a get and a matana are equated for these issues. So it seems Rabbi Avina, who's in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Huna is in Bavel. So it seems that Rabbi Avina must have made Aliyah. And what he's saying here is he should run back to his Rebbe in Bavel, because the psak of his Rebbe, Rav Huna, will help him out tremendously over here, which is ma matanato imamad chuzer. Just like by matanat shchiv meira, if he's on his deathbed and he grants a gift, if he survives the illness, none of the gifts go through, because there's a clear underlying premise in all these gifts is that he's going to pass away. And that's why he's giving away all of his property. So if something changes, which is he survives, then obviously he didn't mean to give a gift. Avkito, the same is true of the get. If he says, give the get or kitvu get, and then he survives for whatever reason, imamad chuzer, he can back out of it, because the whole premise of the tenai of the get was, I'm going to die, therefore I want the get to be given. Umagito, and now it's a two-way street. So we learned something from matana to get, but also now we're going to learn something from get to matana. Magito afagav delo parish, and just like the get, even though he doesn't say it explicitly, which is our Mishnah. Kitvu means kitvu u tznu. Kevin da amar kitvu avgav delo amar tznu. Even though he expresses it as simply writing, not giving. Af matanato. Same thing with the matana. Kevin da amar tznu. Give the gift. Afagav delo konumine. Even without a kinyan and somebody being zoche on his behalf, it still goes through. And it's as if there was a command and a kinyan involved. So that's exactly what he's suggesting over here. All that Gneva said was, Havu, give these items to Rabbi Avina. There's no Kenyan here. There's no acquisition on behalf of Rabbi Avina. So why does it go through? Why is it an effective gift? The answer is, because Matana is like get. Just like a get over here, without the full sentence, we still say, it's as if he said it. So it's over here, even though there's no full sentence, when he says havu, it means give it to him effectively as if he has a kinyan on the matter. And that's what he means, go to Rav Huna, your Rebbe, because based on Rav Huna, you're entitled to go get this item, even though all he said was havu, give it to them. He can back out of the gift, or did he really mean to gift it? The only way you can lock it in is by making a kinyan that effectively shows that he has gemir tadat on this. What Rav Huna is basically saying here is that it has the tokif of a matnat shchiv meira. And since it has a talk of a matnat shchiv meira, then the amira is sufficient, and that in it itself is the kinyan, and that's why you don't need an additional kinyan over here, but that's going to provide us with the problem. Because matkif la Rabbi Avo, I matana, ima matana, yeshna la'achar mita, avget, yeshna la'achar mita. So Rabbi Avo says, if you want to extend this hekesh, you're making a hekesh between matana and get, that means, just like a gift can be gifted after death, mean that you can command that a gift be given after death, that's fine. So too, you should be able to give a get, a charmita, which is obviously impossible. So you're creating this hekesh between matana and get, but there's a problem with that hekesh, which is that they function differently. Matana can function after death, a get cannot function after death. Marzeh zochiyashto, it's an interesting answer of the Gemara, how can you compare the cases? Bishlama matana itala charmita. Of course, by a matana, there's a possibility of doing it after death. El get achar mita miika. There is no such thing as a get achar mita. So the answer of the Gemara is exactly the wording of the question, which the question is, how shouldn't you be able to compare them? The Gemara goes, no, because they're different. So the Gemara is basically, or in essence, saying, a compare them or the hekesh applies to areas where there's overlap, where it makes sense. Obviously, in the case where, after death, only one of them is functional, the other one's not, you can't make a hekesh over there. The comparison doesn't stand in that area. But in areas where there's common ground between a get and a matana, over there we will say there's a hekesh between them and they'll function the same way. Ella, Rabbi Abba, Achika Kashale. This was Rabbi Abba's question. Matanat, Shchiv Meira, B'miksati. The problem here is it is a partial gift or a partial tzava'a. Matanat, Shchiv Meira, B'miksat, Bayi Kinyon. And a partial gifting of a Shchiv Meira requires a Kinyon. Because when it comes to a Matanat, Shchiv Meira, we believe that a person who's on their deathbed and is distributing their assets would do it in a way that they distribute all their assets. When they distribute all the assets, that means they truly believe that they're not going to make it, they're going to pass away, and that's why they're giving a tzava to give away all their assets. If they keep anything as a residual for themselves, that means that they have in the back of their head the possibility that they might survive. And since they might survive, they keep something for themselves. If the person doesn't believe they're going to survive, there's no reason to keep anything for themselves. So what we say is that when a person gifts as a matnat shchiv meira, it's only called a matnat shchiv meira if he gives away all of his assets. Because there are two things involved in that. Number one is, means that he's pretty certain he's not going to make it. And number two is, it means that embedded in the gift is that he's going to pass away. And that's why if he doesn't pass away, he can reverse all the gifts. On the other hand, if he only gives away a portion of his assets, it's the equivalent of a matnat bari. As if someone's gifting something like a regular person, by the mere fact that he leaves a residual, means that he's not really so certain that he's going to pass away. And therefore only gives a portion of it, and he keeps some for himself. And so that means that it's not really a matnat shchiv meira, which has implications in two ways. First of all, you can't just do it through amira, you need a kinyan. And number two is, if there is a kinyan, he can't back out of it and say, oh, I survived, I'm okay, because he didn't gift it with the premise that he's going to pass away, because he left himself property, which means in the back of his head he wasn't certain that he was going to pass away. Over here, you have a matnat shchiv meira b'mitzat. Geneva didn't give all of his possessions to Rabbi Avina. He only gave him a portion of his possessions. And therefore, it shouldn't have a din of a matnat shchiv meira over here, and should require a kinyan. It shouldn't be subject to the rules of get and matnat shchiv meira, which are all about someone in their moments before they're going to pass away or be executed. That shouldn't be the case over here. Michlau, Dravuna Savar, lo bayi kinyan. Based on that, you would say that Bavuna's statement is that you don't need a kinyan. Vakai melon dubayi kinyan. Isn't this a pretty defined normative halacha that when you have a matnat shchiv meira mixat, you need a kinyan? And so how does Ravuna disagree with that? Shani hocha, the mitzvah machmat mitohi. So here, this is a last will and testament where someone is saying, this is what they say right before they die, and we try as much as possible to carry out the word of the mate. So there are two things that are vying over here. One is a matnat shchiv meira, which is a person who's trying to be misader all of his possessions before he dies. There, if he's misader everything, it gets a status of matnat shchiv meira. If he doesn't a portion of it, then it doesn't get a status of matnat shchiv meira. But beyond that, there's another factor here, which is the mitzvah machmat mito, which is someone's on their deathbed and asks us to do something, we try as much as possible to carry out their instructions. So independent of the matnat shchiv meira, which would be the equivalent of someone's will, over here, we're talking about people that are giving a direct command that we want to at least fulfill the word of the mate. Similar to what you're saying, he's being taken out, he just says, give this guy the 400 zuz. So independent of matnat shchiv meira, he's giving us an instruction that we'd like to keep for him because he wanted that taken care of, and we'd like to help him out with that. Michlal, the Rabbi Abba suffer mitzvah machman mita boi kinyon. So that means that Rabbi Abba disagrees with that, and that's what he's questioning over here, that some sort of last will that he's giving, indicating what would please him if it was taken care of. Vakayim alone, isn't this also normative halacha, delo bayi kinyan? That when it's mitzvah machmat amet, you also don't need a kinyan, and we carry it out. Ela Rabbi Abba hochika kashle. This was Rabbi Abba's problem with the case. Chamra lo kamar, demei chamra lo kamar. So Rashi explains over here, he doesn't tell him what to be gifted from. He doesn't say, give him wine. He also doesn't say him, give him money. What he does say is, give him money from the wine. Now, give him money from the wine sounds very strange, and is almost an instruction that is meaningless or unintelligible. Because how do you give money from a wine? Even the Shita Mekubetz, it even says, what do you want him to do? It sounds like there's money inside the wine. And he's got to stick his hand in there and take the money out. Meaning that there are ways to say, monetize the wine. That's Demei Chamra. There are ways to say, give him the wine. That's Chamra. What does it mean? Arba Me'ezuze Mei Chamra. Why do you need to do that? What's the information that he's giving him? Mei Chamra Kamar. Since he says Mei Chamra, seems like he's saying something unintelligible. And therefore, maybe he shouldn't get a gift at all. Or maybe there's nothing to give him in this case. That's Rabbi Abba's question. Tosfot over here says that Demei Chamra might imply that the wine was already sold and that it was monetized already. So Demei Chamra means that wine that we sold, give him the money from that wine that sold. Chamra would mean to give him the wine itself. But in either case, Rabbi Abba says that the way that he expressed it didn't capture either one of these. And therefore, maybe there's no gift over here. Or maybe we can't make heads or tails out of it, so there shouldn't be any gift. V'idach, but Rav Huna's view of it is, Mechamra kedeliapot et kocho. He said Mechamra along the lines of what you were suggesting, which was to strengthen his claim over here. Shalchu mitam, they sent from over there, Mechamra kedeliapot et kocho. The same thing, which is the sack is, it's liapot et kocho, from Eretz Yisrael, they also sent, that the reason he said Mechamra is to strengthen his position. What Rashi says is, it comes to strengthen his position because, had he said it was just Chamra, then the Yorshim could say to him, this is your wine, and sorry, your barrels were machmitz. They went bad. Went sour, there's something wrong with the wine. And they could just say, here's your 400 barrels, or your wine, and you're out of luck. Or, if they monetized the wine, they could say, oh, we monetized it, but the money got lost. Sorry, that was your money that got lost. So if he had expressed it as Chamra or Demei Chamra, then Rabbi Avina was at risk if something happened to the wine or something happened to the money that was generated through the wine. The other hand, when he says to him, Arba Me'ezuze Mei Chamra, he basically collateralizes all the wine to ensure that he gets his 400 zuz. And that's what Rashi says is happening over here, is that he actually gave him all the wine as collateral to ensure that nothing goes wrong. Meaning all the losses will be borne by the Yorshim, and Rabbi Avina will get his money no matter what, because it's collateralized by all the wine. So that's how Rashi explains it. Tosafot does not see Rashi's understanding completely, but says that it's clear that he has to share in the losses. It can't be that he owns a part of this, and the Yorshim own a part of this, and the Yorshim bear all the losses. All it's saying is that, in this case, he will only share in the losses on a percentage basis. Meaning in the previous iteration, or the way that Rabbi Abba is explaining it, he could bear all the losses, because the Yorshim could give him all the bad stuff, or tell him that his money got lost, or his wine went bad. On the other hand, over here, Le'apeuta Kocho says that he and the Yorshim are co-owners of everything that's here. So if a percentage of the wine goes bad, then based on their co-ownership, he will take a percentage of that will be his. And the same thing with the loss of money. But the Yapota Kocho doesn't make him totally exempt from losses and say that it all comes at the expense of the Yorshim. It just says that they will be on an equal playing field and their percentage ownership will determine their ownership in what's good and what's bad. And so that's how Tosafot explains it. Rashi says that he gets his money and then afterwards they get all the losses. Tosafot says all it does, the Yapota Kocho means that he's a shared party, not that he bears all the losses. Others explain here that, I think it's the Ramban over here explains, that it has to do with the market price. We give him the advantage of what the market price is at the time that the command is given. That means that if the market price drops, then he's entitled to his 400 zuz, irrespective of how much wine it takes to get to that 400 zuz. If the price goes up, then he gets the wine at the market price of that day, and then he takes the wine and he can sell it at the higher price. So basically what it does is he gets a call option on the price of the wine, which is if the price goes down, he gets 400 zuz. If the price goes up, he gets 400 zuz worth of wine at the time that the tzibui was given, and then he can sell it at the higher price later. And that's what it means, the yapot et kocho. It gives him the advantage in both directions. No matter whether the price goes up or down, he'll be protected. So at minimum, he'll get 400 zuz. But he could get more because he has a call option if the price goes up. That's the way the Ramban explains it. Next Mishnah. Mi shaya mushlach labor. Someone who's found in a pit. Bor usually means a cistern, as I've explained before. Vamar kolo shumad kolo ichtov get the ishto. Says, anybody who hears me, please write a get to my wife. Hareyichtovu v'yitnu. Not only do they write it, but they also give it. Because it's obvious that this individual is found in a place of sakana. And obviously, as Rashi points out here, he told them what his name was and what the name of his city is, because they can't write a get unless they have that type of information. So he discloses them all the information that they need, and they write the get despite the fact that they never see him. And they don't know his circumstance, but it's pretty clear that he's calling out from a cistern that he's in grave danger, and that he wants someone to help him out. And that's why he's saying, Kol HaShomei, anybody hears me, please carry this out for me. Now, Tosafot over here, questions from the Gemara in Nidarim, where the Gemara there says, if you're mudar hana'a from someone, in an instance when someone says, kol ha-shomeya, that means that you're not made into a shliach. You're not made into an agent. And therefore, you can do this on behalf of that party, even though you're mudar hana'a from them, because it's not direct agency. When you make a direct agent, then you have a problem of hana'a from that agent. Now then, when you give a general statement where there's no directed agency, then we say that it's not giving him hana because he doesn't specify the individual who is going to do it. It's similar to the Gemara in Shabbat with regards to a fire. A person who says on Shabbat, he cannot instruct, he cannot tell a goy to put out the fire, but he can't say, kol mechabein o masid. Anybody who puts it out won't lose, because there he's not appointing anybody directly. Just whoever does it knows that they'll be taken care of afterwards. But that means that they're not direct agents of the individual. But if that's the case here, here is a deficit. In those cases, it's a benefit. But over here, if they're not direct agents of the individual, how do they grant a get? How do they act on his behalf to give a get to his wife? So here, the deficit is serious. I mean, there it's helpful by mudar hana. It's helpful by the sreifa. But over here, it causes a problem. Tosfot in the end says, it's a quasi-shliach status, which is a directive like this, is enough of an agency that the person who acts on your behalf is acting with your acquiescence and with your directive. Which means that if you tell them to go take off chuma, they can take off chuma. Tell them to give a get, you can give a get. But it's not directed enough that it's considered to be hana'a for the person who carries it out, in particular for this individual. And so Tosafot calls it, I guess, a quasi-shlichut, which is that it binds you strongly enough to the individual that they can carry out your instructions, but it doesn't bind you so strongly that they are considered to be giving you hana'a, or they're considered to be your agents for Shabbat, as if they're carrying out your orders to do something. And so for that reason, it can cover both sides of the din. Or you can be actually poseach ashnei siipim. You can straddle the fence here and have it be both shlichut, but not a problem of hana'a. Now the Gemara asks a very strange question, which is, V'lichosh shema sheid hu. How do you know that this is really a human being? How do you know? Maybe it is a sheid. So Tosafot over here speaks about where sheidim are found, restrictions about greeting people in certain locations, because maybe they are sheidim. What comes out of this, and Tosafot and other rishonim, is that we don't just generally assume that when we're talking to human beings that they might be a sheid. And we don't just assume any situation we're in, we got to worry about whether this guy is a fake. It's only in situations or circumstances where shadim would be found. Those are in areas of desolation. Those are places outside the city. Over here, we're talking about seemingly an isolated place where the person has fallen to a cistern. There's nobody around to help him out. He's just screaming out, anybody who hears me, please give a gift to my wife. The circumstances make it that he's in a place where shadim tend to hang out. And that's why we are lechush mishum sheid. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, kisheru lo dmut adam, says because he looks like a human being. So the Gemara retorts, inunami idmuye idmu. They also appear like human beings. I mean, sheidim can give up an illusion of being a human being. And therefore, just because you see a human being doesn't mean that they are a human being. Dechazule bebua. You can see him. Now, the normal translation, bua, means a reflection. Here in the Gemara, with regards to shade, it usually means a shadow. That you can see his shadow. where it says, Inunami itluhu babua, that they also have a shadow, or they have a reflection, if you were to translate it in its literal sense. Tachazale bibua de babua. You can see a shadow of a shadow, or a reflection of a reflection. So one way would be, say, if you have a double mirror, that they would only be seen in one, not in the second mirror, if that was a double reflection. The guards to tsel, or a shadow, that's the way that Rashi translates it and others translate it. It refers to a shadow and a shadow of a shadow. The way Rashi explains a shadow of a shadow is that you have a shadow, which is the normal height of the individual, but when the sun, for instance, is very low on the horizon, you cast a much longer shadow. So the part of the shadow that equals the height of the individual is called the shadow, the tsel. The tsel, the tsel, is the shadow that extends beyond the height of the individual, that casts further or longer than the true height of the individual. That happens for a human being, doesn't happen for a shade. Others say that it has to do with the nature of the lighting. Sometimes when you're a place that has multiple sources of light, you can have a large shadow, and then secondary shadows that come off the individual. So a human being will have both a primary shadow as well as the secondary shadows that come off. A shade will only have one shadow and not the secondary shadows. And that's because they are, in a sense, an illusion. They aren't real. When they are appearing, their appearance is simulating that which of a man, but it doesn't completely simulate it. For instance, it's like, that's what they do sometimes on the computer when they're trying to make things realistic. They have a picture of an individual. And so they have a picture of that individual with a shadow coming off of them, thing on the sun. So if you look at the picture, hopefully all the shadows face the same direction. But the nature, the lengths of the shadows will really depend. You have to be really good at it in order to get it to work so that the shadows match like what it would be for human beings. So the same thing over here. They only have a certain amount of illusionary capability, which is that they can create themselves on a shadow, but they can't get this extra piece on because that's too much for them. So that's how they'll be discerning. Vidumo inhu nami itluhu. Maybe they also have this shadow of a shadow, or reflection of a reflection. Rechanina limdani Yonatan. Here he says bunny, or the girsa in the Gemara in Yevamot is sheda, makes more sense. Yonatan the shade, babua itluhu, babua debua leitluhu. I got the inside scoop from the shadim that they only have a shadow, they don't have a shadow of a shadow. Dilma Tsarahi. Okay, let's assume we got a human being here. But maybe it's his co-wife. Meaning that she wants to get this other woman in trouble or make her life miserable. So she's calling out. He would hope that he can discern from the voices that it's a woman and not a man. But if he can't discern between the voices, Tana Berei Rabbi Shmuel, Shata Sakana, Kotrim Notnim, Afa Pishein Makirim. In these types of circumstances, Shata Sakana here doesn't mean the traditional translation of Shat Sakana, which means time of Gzeirat HaMalchut, or when there's persecutions. Shat Sakana here, as Rashi says, Kagon Shezeh Shemsukan Lamut, someone who is in danger of dying. We make these cheshbonot when we're under normal circumstances. But here, there's an unusual circumstance, and as Rashi says, Bim Lo Achsha Avei Matai, if we don't take care of it now, we start to suspect that there's something wrong, they will never be a get given. So in those circumstances, we don't worry about all these crazy possibilities that someone's trying to pull a fast one, trick them into giving a get. We just assume that there's someone in trouble, needs help, and that he wants to give a get. Because of the nature of the circumstances, we question less about whether we should give the get or not, and we give it despite the fact that there could be someone trying to play a trick or do something nasty, because that's not the general circumstance, especially when we're dealing with dangers like this. Habari shamar, a healthy person that says, kidvu get li ishti, write a get for my wife, ratsa lisachek ba. He wants to play games with her. Which means that when he says kidvu, we don't assume kidvu means kidvu utnu. We simply mean makes to write the get. This is probably a healthy person not faced with all these other issues that we're talking about here. Then he's playing with her. He's trying to cause her pain, anguish, put her on notice. Whatever reason that he says it, he doesn't intend for you to write the get and give it. He simply intends for you to write the get. Maybe to scare her. Maseh bibari achad, shamar kitvu get ishti. There was an incident with someone who was a healthy individual who said, write a get to my wife. Vala l'rosh hagag. Then he went up onto the roof, vinafal umet, and fell off and died. Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, im yatzmo nafal, if he fell of his own volition, then hari ze get. Then it is a get, because in essence he wasn't a bari, he was someone almost equivalent of a yotzei bekolar, someone who was in danger. He knew he was going to commit suicide, and therefore at the time that he said it, he met Kitvutz, no, because he was preoccupied with what's going to happen next, that he's going to kill himself. If it was not his fault that he fell off the roof, it was an accident. It was a terrible accident. The wind came and blew him off the roof. Then inu get. Because when he spoke before, he was a full capacity. He had nothing that was bogging him down or causing him to need just to say things quickly, because he was completely of sound mind when he said it. He didn't think he was going to die anytime soon. He didn't think anything was going to happen to him. What happened afterwards is totally disconnected from the instructions he gave about the get. And since those instructions are not connected to any sakana or death, therefore we consider it to be of a bari. And when he says kitvu, it means only kitvu and not snu. Ma'aseh listor says, wait a minute. The incident you brought says the exact opposite of what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says, if a bari says kitvu, that's all it means. Then you bring a case where it says kitvu means kitvu tnu by a bari. Where it says, achsure mechsura, the Mishnah is missing the transition between the first half and the second half, which is vachitani. Imo chiyach sofo al tchilato, if the end proves the beginning, hariz a get, then it is a get. Meaning that a bari is a bari as long as the whole circumstance surrounding him is that of health. But if something happens right afterwards, which indicates that his thoughts at the time were not clear because he was thinking about something else, preoccupied with something else, if something shows that at the time when he gave the get or said write the get, he was somehow compromised in his ability to think clearly. So therefore we say kitvu means kitvu utnu. Umay senami bebari. Then we have the case that's brought down. Shamar kitvu get lishti v'alad rosh agag v'nafal umeit. V'amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, imatzmo nafal ze get. Because sofo proves what the tchilato was. V'marua dachato enu get. If the wind blows him off, then the sofo is not connected to the tchilato, and he was not compromised at the time that he gave the, or said to get, write the get. How gavra the alabek nishto? There was this individual who went into the shul. Ashkach mikre yinoka ubrei. He found a teacher of the children and his son, diyatve. They were sitting there. Biotiv inish achrina gabayu. And there was a third person there. So there are three adults in this situation. The rest are kids who are being taught. You have the teacher's son, and a third party. Amalahu beitre minaychu nichtavu gita ledebitu. It says, two of you write a get to my wife. Lesof shachiv. Lesof shachiv mikra yinoka. In the end, the teacher of children passed away. So this guy goes in there, instructs them to write a get to his wife, and then he takes off. He's leaving overseas and leaves. What do they do now? He instructed three people to write the get. One of them is now gone, which is the teacher. So now you only have two left. The problem is that the two left, we're not certain that's what he meant originally. Mi mishavu inche bra shlika b'makum abo. Does a person make a son, a shliach, in the face of a father? Or lo, or maybe not. The question here is probably twofold. One is the fact that, out of respect, you don't make the son a shliach in the face of the father, and therefore he intended for the father and the third party, and not the son. The second problem you have is that the father and son are krovim. So they two together cannot be shlichim. Since they both cannot be shlichim, he obviously intended only for one of them to be a shliach because he knew that he needed to be mitzaref, a third party, in order for this to work. If the father and son did it, it would not be a kosher get. So it's the father plus the other guy or the son and the other guy. Obviously he knows that when he's given the instructions, and therefore maybe he only intended for one of them, the father, and the son he did not intend to be a shliach. So that's the question here. When a person gives an instruction like that, does he mean one of you two plus the other guy? Or does he mean the father and the other guy and the son's out of the picture? So Rav Nachman says that in that situation, he meant the father and the other party. And that means that if he passes away, the father, there's nobody left because the son was never engaged as an agent. Papi Amar, Mishavu Inche Brosh, Licha B'Makom Avo. He says either or, basically, which is, one of you two plus the third party, and therefore if the father passes away, the son can step in to be the second aid or shliach. So the halacha is that we do assume that he meant either or, and even if the father and son there, we do assume that he meant either of the two parties. Okay, next Mishnah. Amar l'shnayim, he says to two individuals, tnu get li ishti, give a get to my wife. Oh, l'shlosha. He says to three individuals, kitvu get utnu li ishti, write a get and give it to his wife. Hare elu yichtivu v'yitnu. They should write it and give it. So now, in this instance, in the first case, he speaks to two. He says, "Tnu get the ishti, give a get to my wife." Obviously, when he, even though he doesn't say the word kitvu, implied in this is that they must do the writing and the giving because he doesn't give them instructions otherwise. The Gemara will discuss whether the kitvu here that they should write over here means they should sign it, or does it mean that they actually have to write the physical get? There's a question about what that means here, kitvu, that they have to write it. But over here, he makes them two into edim. And those edim, he's instructing to give the get. But when he instructs them to give the get, implied in that is also that kitvu. They should write the get, whether that means to sign the get or means to actually physically write the get. He's giving them instructions that they can't necessarily pass on to someone else. They have to do it themselves. Same thing here with shlosha. Shlosha is a beit din. But where he specifically gives instructions, kitvu, utznu, they must write and give it. Because he gave the instructions kitvu. On the other hand, if he says, Amar l'shlosha, he says to three, tznu get li ishti, says to three people, give a get to my wife, ha'elu yomru l'acherim v'yichtivu, they can instruct other parties to write it, mipnei sha'asan beitin. Because he made him a beitin, only made him a beitin was to ensure that the get gets to his wife. He didn't tell him how to do it. Since he empowered them as a beitin, the beitin can decide how they carry it out. They can ask others to write it and sign it. They can do it themselves, whatever way they want, because they are empowered here. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's the way Rabbi Meir views it, that there's a difference between instructing two and instructing three. Instructing two is a deem, instructing three is a beitin. If you give specific instructions to the beitin, they have to carry them out. But if you give more general instructions to the beitin, that empowers them to do as they see fit to ensure that it happens. Whereas by two, it doesn't matter what you say to them, they're always instructed to do it themselves. Rabbi Chanina ish ono mi beit asurim. So this is halacha was brought up, Rabbi Chanina ish ono, from the prison. This is brought up in the cases of Gemara and Brachot and other places where Rabbi Akiva was incarcerated, and the Chachamim used to go speak to Rabbi Akiva from the window of the prison, and they used to speak in halacha. So he's bringing this halacha from Rabbi Akiva in prison. Mikubalani, bomer l'shlosha, tznu get l'ishti, shemru l'acherim v'yichtavu, mipnei sha'asan beitin. So he has a corroboration of this statement of Rabbi Meir. Not only is Rabbi Meir saying this logically, he also has a mesorah that says that Rabbi Chanina ish ono brought from his Rabbi, Rabbi Akiva, that this is the case, that when you appoint three, they become a beitin to execute on your behalf, and they're empowered to do whatever they need to do to get it done. They don't have to actually do it themselves, unless he specified that they must do it themselves. Amar Rabbi Yossi, nomino l'shloyach. Af anu mekublim. We accept the shliach, but we also have a Kabbalah. Shafil amar the Beit Din HaGadol should be Yerushalayim. Even if he instructs the Beit Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim, tznu get l'ishti, give a get to my wife, sheyilmedu v'yichtavu v'yitnu. They need to learn how to write it, and give it. Meaning that there's no choice here. If he instructs anybody to do it, he literally means you must do it, and you cannot pass that on to a third party. You must do it yourself. Even if it's two, even if it's three, even if it's Beit Din HaGadol, they have to do it themselves. Amar la Sarah, he says to 10 people, kitvu utznu get the ishti, write and give a get to my wife, echad kotev, ushnayim chotmim. One of them writes it, and two of them sign on it. Because what he's doing is, he is instructing 10 people to make a kosher get. That involves writing, and that involves signing it. Out of those 10 people, one person needs to write it, two people need to sign for it, and that is what he empowered these 10 people to do, is carry out or make a get. Now then, if he says, kuchem tovu, all of you write the get, then echad kotev, obviously they can't all write a get, there's only one get in the end, so one writes on their behalf, v'kulan chutmim. And they all have to sign on the get. The reason he specified kuchem is because he wants them all to be signatories to the get. Lefikach, meitachad mehem erizeh get patel. If one of those 10 passes away, you can't create the get because you're missing one of the signatories that he demanded. So when he says kulchem, he means all of you must sign it. When he simply instructs them in general, then he says, out of you 10 people, ensure there's a get. That means that one of them can write it, any two of them can sign it. So that's why there's a difference between when he specifies kulchem and not. Again, that's something that we bumped into earlier in the Masechta, discussing that difference. Now the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ababa, Shalchulei mibei Rav b'Shmuel. So this is obviously after Rav passed away, that they send from the Beit Midrash of Rav a question to Shmuel. Yilamdenu Rabbeinu. Please teach us, our Rebbe. Amar l'shnayim, he says to two people, kitvu utnu get li ishti, write and give a get to my wife. Ve'amru l'sofer, they instructed a sofer, v'katav, and he wrote the get. V'chatmu ein, and then they signed on the get. Mahu, what is the din? Now basically, it seems that they're asking the question that we noted in our Mishnah, when it says over here that they must write it and give it, what does it mean that they must write it? Does that mean they literally must write the get? Or does writing mean they must sign on the get? They can have it written, but they have to sign. The writing part of it is that you sign the get yourselves. Shalachu, Shmuel sent back to them, Teitzei, she has to get divorced from the new husband because she's not divorced from the first husband. But Devar Tzarich Tamud, but we're still uncertain as to what the halach is. That means that she is now stuck in a limbo state. She's not really divorced from her first husband, so she has to divorce her second husband. But we're not sure that she's still married to her first husband, and she has a get. So she therefore is psula the kuhuna, because she might be a divorcee. So she's stuck. My adavar tzarich tamud. What exactly is the question that is perplexing Shmuel? Ilei memishum davalei milei. It's because it's instructions. Umispekalei milei, and he's not sure about instructions. Imimsaram lishliach, ilom imimsaram lishliach. Are you able to pass on instructions to another party? If you're appointed an agent through instructions, can you pass those instructions to a third party? Is that what Shmuel's not certain about here? The person instructed them to write the get, and now they pass on those instructions to the sofer and have him write the get. So you've taken instructions and passed them forward. Vamar Shmuel, Amar Rabbi. Halacha k'Rabbi Yosi, Shmuel says in the name of Rabbi, which is more unusual. We don't see this so many times in Shas, that Shmuel quotes Rabbi. Halacha k'Rabbi Yosi. The halacha is like Rabbi Yosi, damar, mile lo mimsram l'shliach. That you can't pass these instructions on to a shliach. The way that Rashi terms it over here is, that when you're talking about a physical object you can't pass from one shliach to the next. Because the person gave you an object, and wants you to transport, move the object, so you can take that object and then pass it on to another party and they can move it along. When you're talking about an intangible item, like instructions, there's no way to pass instructions on. There's no way to create the passing of the instruction from the agent to another agent, because the instructions are exactly that. They're instructions that are given to this particular individual to carry them out. There's no way to pass them forward because of their intangible nature. That's the way that Rashi terms it. Others suggest that it has to do with the nature of the shlichut, which is how whole an item, when it is an object that's involved, then there's a complete action that needs to be taken, and you can pass that complete action on to another party. When there are instructions given, instructions are a part of a larger picture over here. Can you then break down the instructions and say, all right, you write it, we sign it, or we'll give it, meaning that are you able to then only pass on a portion of the item or something that's not a complete item? Like writing the get, which is not the complete instruction, it's not the complete item that they need to do. That's how others express it. Ella, l'shmuel, so obviously that's not the question for Shmuel here, because he clearly thinks you cannot pass on the instructions. L'shmuel, ha, come on, vayile. This is what Shmuel's issue is. Hi, tovu, when it says k'tovu, iktav yadan, iktav get. When it says that you must write it, does it mean you must sign it, ketav yadan? Or does it mean tov get, meaning that you have to write the get itself, that they have to write the physical get itself? Correct. Write it and sign it then. So he's not sure as to the meaning in the Mishnah. Where it says, v'tiv sholei mi matnitin. Let us try to answer that from the Mishnah. The question could have been asked on the Mishnah itself. I mean, that it's not even just a question from Shmuel. Even in the Mishnah itself, it's not clear what the ketovu means or kitvu means in the Mishnah. So you could ask the question on the Mishnah. The Gemara is now going to try to prove through the nature of the Mishnah what it is. Amar l'shnayim tznu get l'ishti. He instructs two people to give a get to his wife. O l'shlosha kidvu get tznu l'ishti. Harelu yichdevu v'yidnu. There it sounds like he has to write it and give it. The Gemara says, he gufa kami ba'ile. That's exactly our question. That part of the Mishnah, we'd have the same question, or that's exactly what Shmuel's asking, is what does it mean over there? Tovu k'tav yadanu. It says to write it, they must write it. It means that they must sign it. O k'tav getu. Or does it mean they must write the get physically and sign it? We're not sure in the Mishnah. Right? Pshita diktav hagetu. It must be that they're talking about writing the physical get. Diktani seifa. Because the latter half of the Mishnah says, Amar Rabbi Yossi, nomino l'shliach, afanu mikubalim. The shliach brought this, but we also have a Kabbalah. Shafilo amar l'beitin agadol shebishalayim, tnu get l'ishti, shilmedu v'yichtevu v'yitnula. That even if the instructions were given to the beitin Yerushalayim, then they must learn, write it, and give it. Iamar bishlama k'tav getu. If you're talking about writing the physical get, shapir, that is understandable that they don't know how to write a get. Right? They don't know how to write carefully. They have to know the lashon. We're assuming they are talmidei chachamim over here. But it may not be that they have the best handwriting. They write the letters as clearly as we would want. They're not so frame necessarily. They are talmidei chachamim. So they would have to learn how to write a get in that case. And that's not a given. Other than, eleyemar k'tav yadanu, if you say that it means their signatures, Mika Beidina Doloyadei Mechtam Chatimat Yadayu. Since when does a Beitin of Tamid Chachamim not know how to sign their name? Obviously they're literate. Obviously they write. And they can sign their names. It doesn't take much to create a signature here. You can scribble to make a signature. You don't need anything complex to make a signature. So how would you have a Beitin that doesn't know how to sign their names? And then you would say, oh, they have to learn how to sign their names. That seems an implausible scenario. That they wouldn't know how to sign their names, and therefore the kidvu must mean write the physical get. Where it says in, ika beidina chadato. There's a new beitin, and a new beitin, they may not know how to do this. That's also not so straightforward. Why does a new beitin not know this? The way that I would express it, and I would explain it, not that they don't know how to sign their names, but we saw earlier in the Masechta that the Rabbonan used to have signatures that were unique. They used to draw a picture. They used to do something that made their signature easily recognizable and discernible. And so that's what it means that it's a Beit Din Charata, where they haven't already established their signatures or the way that they stamp their documents. And that's what it means they have to learn. And if they don't have a fixed signature already or a way that they express themselves, they're going to have to learn or they have to put something together. And that would be their signature. That's what I would suggest over here. Because otherwise it still seems very implausible that they wouldn't know how to sign their names at all. But there are those that say that they're a new Beit Din and they haven't practiced signing. And that's because the reason they're appointed the Beit Din HaGadol is because they're Talmidei Chachamim, not because they know how to write. And maybe they don't know how to write. Maybe they don't know how to sign. That's how some express it. I still think that it makes more sense to say that they might know how to write, but they haven't come up with their stamp yet or their signature yet. So now, Isvir Alan Daik Tovu K'tav Yadanu Ha K'tav Get Kasher. So now, if we say now that Haik Tovu is Ketav Yadanu, means their signatures, Haktav Get Kasher. That means that the Ketav of the Get is Kasher. V'amar Shmo Amar Rabbi Alocha Ke Rabbi Yossi, V'amar Milei Lo Mimsran L'Shliach. That means that if you really believe that in the Mishnah we're talking about Ketav Yadan, that what it means there is that we only demand that they sign it, then that means that if the Sofer writes it, that it would be fine. But that means that what we're concluding is that you were given instructions and now you're passing those instructions on to the Sofer, which means that we just saw that Shmuel paskin otherwise, which he paskins aloha k'Rabbi Yossi damar milo lo mimsra on the shliach, that you can't pass on these intangible instructions to another party. Amrei, isvir lan diktov k'tav yadanu k'tav aget naseh ke'omer imru. If the word tovu means you sign it, not that you write it, implicit in the instruction is, as if he says to them, Imru, tell someone to write the get. Implied in the instruction of Kidvu, it's new is, you sign it, you give it. Implied in that means, get someone to write the get that you can sign. It's implicit in the instruction that you'd be able to pass it on to someone else, as if you say Imru. I mean that, not that you're simply deciding to pass the instruction on, but as if you were instructed to pass the instruction on. where it says, Omod Rabbi Yossi Be'omro Yimro. If Rabbi Yossi says that in a case where you weren't instructed specifically, you can't pass it along. But if you were instructed to pass the instructions on, it would work in that case. Where it says, Omod Rabbi Yossi Be'omro Yimro. Does Rabbi Yossi really agree in that case? Even when the instructions are explicit, does he agree that you can instruct someone to instruct someone else to do something? Here he's instructing Edim to ask the sofer to write the get. But it's not. Then we have a Mishnah further on. Tav sofer ve'eid kasher. If you have the sofer's writing and another aid, the get is kasher. Over there, the ktav sofer, it's not clear what ktav sofer means. Does that mean that the sofer wrote it and his ktav yado, mean that he wrote the get, and then you have one aid sign on it, the two of them become aidim because the sofer wrote it and the other aid, that makes them two aidim automatically. Or does ktav sofer mean that the sofer signed it along with the aid? Which of those is it? So that's a machloka that we'll get to in the upcoming Gemaras. Amar Rav Yirmiya, chatam sofer shaninu. When it says ktav sofer, it doesn't mean the writing of the sofer, but it means the signature, meaning that he signed it as well. Amar Rav Chista, matznitan mani. And Rav Chista says, who's the author of that Mishnah? Rabbi Yossi is Rabbi Yossi. Damar, mile lo mimsaran l'shliach. That you can't pass words on. V'isav kadatcho. If you think Moda Rabbi Yossi ba'omer imru, if you think that Rabbi Yossi agrees that you can pass it along when there are specific instructions, nafik minei churva. That will lead to a situation or circumstances that will be destructive in nature, which will undermine Gitin in general. Dezimnin, because there'll be cases. Damar lo l'shnayim, they'll say to two people, imru l'sofer v'yichtov, go tell the sofer to write the get. Uploni uploni v'yachtamu. And tell so-and-so to go sign the get. So here it's a case of Imru. He's giving out instructions. But the instructions specify that you go and tell other people to do something. Tell the sofer to write it. And tell uploni uploni to sign it. Umishum kisufa de sofer. These eidim, because they feel like the sofer is going to be embarrassed. Or feel bad about the fact that he didn't ask the sofer to sign it. Chayshe. They're going to worry about that. He'll have one of the two, Edim, plus the sofer, sign it. And the Baal didn't ever instruct in that way. So if you can allow for instructions to be passed forward, and Rabbi Yossi agrees to that, then you're going to really have a problem here, because the sofer is allowed to sign on the document. And his signature on the document is good, according to Rabbi Yirmiya. Based on that, then the sofer can sign. That means that if you instruct Edim to go out and get a sofer to write it and two other Edim to sign it, they're going to worry about the feelings of the sofer, and they're going to let the sofer sign it. And then it'll be sofer and one of the Edim, which otherwise could have been a kosher get, but here where the instructions were otherwise, will not be a kosher get. And that's what the churva is going to be. How could Rabbi Yossi allow something like this to happen, or the chatam sofer to be allowed to be written, because it's going to lead to a very difficult situation. It says, Kevin Damar Mar, Kasher, Velota Sekein, Yisrael. Since a get like that, where the sofer is signed on it, is Kasher, but we tell you, don't do that. That's not something we're going to accept. We're only going to accept it Bidi Abad. Don't do it the Chatkila. That's not something that you should do. Lo Shkiach. Therefore, it's not common. And since it's not common, they're not gozer for that case. It's such an unusual case, because the Chatkila, you're not allowed to have the sofer sign on it, that a circumstance like that, that would come up, is so far-fetched that we're not going to worry about, we're not going to be gozer for that. Now, Rashi points out over here that it's lo shchicha. The problem here is that Shmuel late laid the Rabbi Yirmiya. Like Shmuel later on doesn't hold of Rabbi Yirmiya. There are different ways to explain that Mishnah. Rabbi Yirmiya is only one of the ways to explain it. Ela, tav sofer v'chatamei. He says over there that the Mishnah means the handwriting of the sofer plus when he needed that sign on it. V'lo muki like Rabbi Yossi. And he doesn't set up the Mishnah there like Rabbi Yossi. So the whole question derives from Rabbi Yirmiya, who says the Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi and explains it in that way. The problem is that Shmuel himself sets up the Mishnah like Rabbi Meir and says it has to do with the handwriting of the sofer. Then so Rashi says, Lora even mitinta bechatina sumer klal. Ben Rabbi Yossi, ben Rabbi Meir, ksheira chatima. Ushmuel, late the Rav Chista, tamar Rabbi Yossi, ktav sofer, v'divri akohi. He also doesn't hold of Rav Chista, who says it's Rabbi Yossi. What Rashi points out is that Shmuel does not explain in this manner or in this way the Gemara over there. And despite that fact, The Gemara is asking the question and saying, within the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, we're going to have a problem. And that's what the Gemara is doing over here. Even though Shmuel may not hold of it, but if we are consistent in explaining this according to Rabbi Yossi's Shita, we could run into this problem. And therefore, maybe even Shmuel will agree. If you do explain it like Rabbi Yossi over there, then you'll have a problem. And how could Rabbi Yirmiyah explain it in that manner? Because the question they're bringing from Rabbi Yirmiyah is an Amora who is younger than Shmuel. How can you question Shmuel from a younger Amora's statement? Ella, what you must have to say is that even though Shmuel set it up like Rabbi Meir there, he would agree that according to Rabbi Yossi, this would be the way you would have to set it up. And since you would have to set it up this way, it would present a problem. The Lichosh Dilma Amar Lahu the Beitrei. So why don't we worry about the fact that maybe he said to two people, Imru le Sofer v'ichtov, that he'll say to the Edim, tell the Sofer to write it. Vatem chatomu, and you sign the get. Not that he tells them to go tell other people to sign, but you yourselves should sign the get. Vaz lehanach mishum kisufa. And again, these two people, because they worry about the feelings of the Sofer, kisufa the Sofer, umichat melei le Sofer bahadi chad minayu. And then one of them signs it along with the Sofer. Ubal lo amarachi, and these weren't the instructions. Imre hanami kasher velotasehu. That's also a case where it's kasher, but don't do it. And if you don't do it, therefore it's not shkiach. And if it's not shkiach, we're not going to worry about a case. Where it says, hanicha lamanda amar, that makes sense according to one who says kasher velotaseh. That we apply this view that that is kasher, but don't do it to that circumstance. According to the one who says that you're allowed to do this, and then it will become a prevalent case because you're allowed to do this, then what are you going to say in this case? Because then there is a possibility that this would happen, that the sofer would be signed on it. And the sofer signing it is no problem, and these will be cases that will come up. How come over there we don't worry about Rabbi Yossi Shita according to Shmuel? Ella Rabbi Yossi Tarti Amar. Rabbi Yossi has two positions. Shmuel suffer like kavate bechada, upale galei nechada. He agrees with one of them, and he doesn't agree with the other. Rabbi Yossi's two positions are, one, the position that we have in our Mishnah, which is, whether you give instructions to three, or you give instructions to two, it means, kidvu utnu, that you must write it, and you must give it. The second thing that Rabbi Yossi says is that, mile lo mimsaran, you're not allowed to pass on instructions as an agent, and that's even if you give them Imru Omer. Even if they specifically instructed the agents to give over the instructions to another party, according to Rabbi Yossi, it doesn't work. Shmuel Paskins like Rabbi Yossi, like our Mishnah, which says that even if you give instructions to three or two, doesn't matter. You have to kidvut, no? You have to write it and you have to give it. But he disagrees with Rabbi Yossi as far as Be'imru. If you give specific instructions to an agent to instruct the third agent, that is fine. And that works. And there he disagrees with Rabbi Yossi. And that's what Rashi says over here. Rabbi Yossi pasul legamrei, v'ita the Rav Chista. That according to Rabbi Yossi, it's all pasul. And that's according to the Shita of Rav Chista. The fact that we say that if the sofer is signed on it, it's not a problem, it's because all these incidents can't happen, according to Rabbi Yossi, because you never can instruct shlichim to instruct other parties to do things. And so that case will never come up. Since that case will never come up, we don't have to worry about a churva coming out of this that the sofer signed on it. Because even if the sofer signs on it, it can only be in a case where the baal instructed him directly to sign on it. If not, you can't have anybody instruct someone to do something because that doesn't work in shlichut according to Rabbi Yossi. So Shmuel disagrees with that. Now Shmuel is in a bind then because in our Mishnah, the case will be that if it means ketav yadan, that they must sign it, that means that they can give over instructions to the sofer, and that's milei demimsaran. But that's okay because there it's implicit in the words that imru, as if he had said to them, go ahead and ask, tell the sofer to do it. And he disagrees with Rabbi Yossi's psak over there, and therefore he can ask the sofer to write it. Or the kitvu in our Mishnah means, literally, they must write the get, and that's Shmuel Safek over here. He doesn't know whether he should read kitvu as sign it, and implicit instructions as tell the sofer to go write it, or kitvu means you guys got to write the get. And since he doesn't know, that was the safek that Shmuel had over here, and that's why he said that the woman must get divorced. But I still don't know what their status is, because I don't know whether it's a get or not, depending on what the meaning of kitvu is in our Mishnah. Tosfot over here asks, why isn't it considered to be aid me pi aid when you give instructions to a shliach to tell someone else to do something? Which it becomes an aid me pi aid or hearsay, because you're passing words rather than you yourself witnessing and saying something. So Tosfot says over here, Tahani mile kishamo mi pi aidim, Shiploni lavami ploni. That's only when it's hearsay, when you're hearing from Edim what happened, and then you're passing along that information. Over here, the instructions are given to the individuals not to be Edim, and then say, tell these other people to be Edim as well. No. The instructions are, you be an agent to get these other people to be Edim. There's only one state of Edim, which are the people you're supposed to instruct. Therefore, it's no longer considered aid may be aid, because he's telling that the final individuals will be the Edim. And those individuals will be edim to the fact that they're doing this. And the Rishonim are simply a emissary or an agent from the Baal to get these other parties to be edim. And that's why it's not deemed to be or considered to be aid mi pi aid. Okay, we'll stop here. 13 lines down on the top of Samach Zayin Amud Aleph.